Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know what most white people in this country feel, but I can only include what they feel from the state of their institutions. I don't know if white Christians hate Negroes or not, but I know that we have a Christian church which is white and a Christian church which is black. I know, as Malcolm X once put it, it's the most segregated hour in American life is high noon on Sunday. That says a great deal for me about a Christian nation. It means that I can't afford to trust most white Christians and certainly cannot trust the Christian church. I don't know whether the labor unions and their bosses really hate me. That doesn't matter, but I know I'm not in their unions. I don't know if the real estate lobby is anything against black people, but I know the real estate lobbies keep me in the ghetto. I don't know if the Board of Education hates black people, but I know the textbooks they give my children to read and the schools that we have to go to. Now, this is the evidence. You want me to make an act of faith, risking myself, my wife, my woman, my sister, my children, on some idealism which you assure me exists in America, which I have never seen.
That was James Baldwin on the Dick Cavett Show, 1967. This is Don Allen. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight?
Fine, Mr. Allen, and thank you for that touching once again with history. In fact, as a young man, if you will, I saw that Dick Cavett program, and of course it was rare for an African-American or Negro to be on a major network doing anything. But I can remember how many of us young men, I had just returned from the University of Syracuse under the Alinsky program, and it was very, very moving, very compelling, and very, very accurate, if you will. We have an outstanding guest with us this evening, but before I do that, Don, I've been asked by members of the Federal Oversight Department of Justice Committee, which I'm a member of, if we would make people aware that the unfortunate shooting of four women in the city on the north side of Minneapolis on Sunday evening, that all four of those women, young women, if you will, were African-American. For whatever reason, the media has chosen not to reflect that. We just think that it is very important, particularly with the atmosphere of terror and fear that is gripping this city. And so I promised them that on tonight's program, which is both domestic and international, that I would point out that four young African-American women gunned down in the vicinity of 8th and Humboldt in North Minneapolis. And one of those young women was pregnant, and that fetus was lost. She was shot in the torso. Probably will never have children, if you will, again. And so I just felt compelled to point out that these four African-American women, this comes on the heels of the death of Miss Beeks, whose funeral was today, if you will, and also the wounding of the sister, the older sister of Reverend Brian Heron of Zion Baptist Church, if you will. And so we just kind of want to take the opportunity to do that because I have a reason to believe that our guest is going to kind of bring us some information that's going to kind of clear the air because I'm puzzled with regards to how many organizations, nonprofits, and leaders are pretending that there was no money for juvenile crime prevention and et cetera. So, Mr. Allen, I turn it back over to you, and we can begin the dialogue and discussion with our guest.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Edwards. This will be a historical show tonight. I am very excited and happy to have Senator David Hand, Republican, District 48, Senate Minority Leader of Minnesota, and the Republicans, and it's very special. Thank you for joining us tonight, sir.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be with you, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yes. Now, District 48, can you let our listeners know? We have a lot of listeners. We have about, it looks like in the queue, probably about 600 people. It's an amazing number. logged in, and we want to give them some information. And those are just people listening that have accounts with Blog Talk Radio, but there's a lot more out there listening. So can you tell us where District 48 actually is, and towns and cities, if you will?
Sure, glad to. District 48 is in the very southwest corner of Hennepin County. It's a suburb of Minneapolis. I grew up in Minneapolis, but have lived out here. My family moved out to Bloomington when I was in high school, and I've lived out here for most of my life. But it is Eden Prairie. It's where I lived, and my district also includes part of Minnetonka.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And you are the Senate Minority Leader, Republican, or for the GOP. And one of the things we want to get into here, I've been promoting this, and, you know, I've talked with you, met with you, and I am letting our listeners know that, yes, we do have friends in the Republican Party, elected officials that will give us straight talk and give us the information that, you know, some of us are not getting, and the information we do get is kind of skewed to one side, if you know what I'm saying. So with that said, I know this legislative session was kind of tough, and there's some rumors out there and some myths, I guess, that there might be a special session. But one of the things that we're interested in and want to pinpoint is the some of the money that went to this disparity package. This first, it started out $100 million, and it went to $35 million, and then some of us found out that an agency.
It started out $100 million, $75
million. Yes.
Then the NAACP and others maintained that they had a commitment and they were going to receive $33 million. And now we're hearing $36 million, but we can only account for about $4.5 million that is been entrusted or invested with an organization. That's a leader in conversations. There's been at least, and I think it's important that the senator and his colleagues know that this is going on, that there have been at least seven meetings with the Pacific organization under an individual who indicates that he speaks and knows the African-American community better than it knows itself. And just in the last couple of days, Senator, he has indicated that the monies, particularly any monies for youth employment, investment in youth, and et cetera, may not be forthcoming until sometime in the late fall, if then, and that he and his organization will be making the determination of who is eligible, qualified, politically connected. Maybe the latter is the best. And so it is creating a significant amount of tension because people are trying to make us believe that the Republicans, some way or another, blocked any meaningful and compassionate legislation that would have allowed us to address some of these problems. And as a longtime observer and et cetera, I know that not to be true, but I don't think this evening, for the purpose of this program, that anyone thought that we'd be able to get a person of your stature to clear the air.
Well, I first I would say that it's news to me that, and as far as I can assure you that there's been no effort by Republicans to do anything to block resources. I know, Don, when you came and visited with us a couple of times recently, we talked about this a little bit, and I know you had expressed some concerns about.
Now this is Ron.
I'm sorry, Ron.
That's okay. Our voices are almost alike. We're almost like brothers.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize, but no, we had talked a little bit about the proposal, and I know there was some concern expressed on your part that these funds may not be going to the right place, or they might not be used the most effective way. And when we met and talked about this, and from our side, we want to make sure that. That any funds that they are going to the places that are needed and that they're being used in ways that are actually going to help people in the community. So that's been our interest, our hope, and we want to work with you to find the most effective ways to do that. But I can assure you there's not been any effort by anybody in the Republican Party to try to block or prevent any funds from being made available, and so that's news to me. I know sometimes when these grants are made, there may be a time lag between the as they disperse the funds to find, you know, the right place to put them. But I don't know the specifics of any particular grant. I'd have to do some research into that. But there hasn't been any move to block any funding.
Yeah, and
this is Ron Edwards. I'm glad to hear that, because that was my thinking, and that was what my examination had concluded. And I thought it was rather unfair, particularly with the level of tension that is now unfortunately gripping our city and particularly our community, that there was an attempt to create some kind of straw man, if you will. When, I have to say this, is when, in fact, the organization that have been identified as recipients of this particular money have very strong ties to the Democratic Party. And I just think that we just need to be fair, balanced, and honest about what's really going on. And let me just say this, gentlemen, Mr. Allen and Senator, it is coming at a very, very difficult time, because young men are and young organizations are submitting gentlemen proposals, something that, you know, the average person says that young individuals maybe with backgrounds in gang activity or et cetera don't have that kind of intellect and et cetera. Well, that's just not true. And I've been very disturbed as a long-time observer. And you know, I've been in this community since 1945. And when I see this kind of gamesmanship being played, and I see dreams being shattered, if you will, I just don't think it's in the best interest of continuity, political, moral, otherwise. So that's part of where I'm coming from tonight. And again, already you have set a part of the record straight. Mr. Allen, back to you.
Yeah, this is Don Allen again. Thank you, Senator Hand, because what we have is what we've had for the last 3 or 4 years, where we have VFL operatives in a room telling the African-American community that the Republicans have blocked this or that or whatever. And one of the things that is troubling me right now is that it seems each legislative session, there are two senators and a state representative who end up being celebrated for getting this money in. But yet, you know, I guess I want to say that black people are naturally conservative, okay? We save our money. We decide what we want to buy. We make good choices overall, and we work real hard. And what happens is, you know, we've been watching a lot of community members. I have over 40 people on the phone line, and please be patient with me. We'll get to some of you, not all of you, but I appreciate you calling, and some of those are listening in the queue. But what we have here, I'm going to continue, is a repeat performance of what we had last year with and the year before with the CSI money. We have this year where Senator Champion and Senator Hayden have manipulated, used the system at hand to get some more money. And we know, as people that have been covering this and following this for years, that, you know, certain people in the community are going to be taken care of. Certain agencies in the community are going to be taken care of. And one of our goals is having you on tonight is to make sure that people get the correct story, the right amount, and understand that the Republicans are not blocking anything, as you just told Mr. Edwards so elegantly, and that the Republicans do support, you know, a common sense approach to problem solving in our community. So with that said, is there going to be a way this time to possibly track what's going on with the powers that be? You know, like Mr. Edward has stated that Emerge is on this list in print, Inc., for $4.2 million. We know that the mayor's husband, Mr. Gary Cunningham, respectfully, works for MEDA, Minneapolis Economic Development Agency, you know, received a little bit over $2 million. And people in the community are raising red flags. And so what we're asking, and I don't represent the whole community. Actually, it would take a bunch of us to represent the whole community, but we want to know, is there going to be – we don't want to be in this place next time, this time next year. Is there going to be something that will that we will find out, reported about where this money went, what the effect it had, and the success?
Don, let's do this with the senator. Let's ask Tim, because he was there. He was in the chambers, if you will. He was in the conference rooms and the caucuses and et cetera. Senator, can you give me your observations starting on March 8th with respect to all the discussion that was going on about a diversity, equity, and et cetera? Could you just walk us through that process?
Well, I certainly wasn't involved in all the conversations personally, but there was an effort to a proposal made by the senators you mentioned to find some funding and use it to address some of the disparity issues in Minneapolis. And I think there is broad support to try to do what we can to provide help. I think the concern that I have, and it reflects the conversation that we had in the Capitol a few weeks ago, that when we make these grants, they should not be used for political purposes, but that they should be used to make a difference. And that is really the challenge. And Don, you were just asking if there was going to be an effort to try to make sure there's clear accountability. And my answer is yes. We are involved in an election. We are hoping and we believe that we will be in the majority next session. And even if we're not, we are going to ask for some accountability and clear understanding of what those monies have been used for, because there is a great desire that we provide the resources that are needed and those resources are actually used effectively. One of the conversations that we did have, I know, for example, is discussions about what we can do to try to strengthen the education experience of a lot of students in Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, and I think that is a huge challenge. And as you probably know, it's been an issue for a long, long time that we haven't been making a lot of headway. And I think that in my view, is a major focus. But there also is a need to make sure that there are opportunities for economic advancement. We have to be able to make sure that the funds that we have are really helping people and are making a difference. And I share completely your desire to make sure that that happens and that these funds are not used just to support or reinforce any political efforts that people may have. And there's always, I think, some danger of that, and we need to have accountability, and we need to make sure that the monies are spent wisely. It's just public's money, after all, and we have an obligation and a duty to do the best we can to make sure that happens. So that's my commitment to you, that we're going to do all we can to ask for and get some clear explanations of what purposes the monies have been used for, and that they're actually helping the people who need help. And we're very interested in doing that, and I'm hoping that we will see a good result. If not, then we're going to have to make some adjustments. I think our commitment is to make sure that those funds are used in the right way.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. We do have
a couple callers with questions that have been screened by the engineer, and I would like to maybe take one now, if that's okay with you.
And let's do that, and why don't we make sure that we respect and accommodate the schedule of the senator. Receive some kind of signal from him on what how long he feels he can be with us. But let's get those callers in. Please identify themselves.
Miss Angela Edwards, you're live on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Let me make a disclaimer at this point. A namesake, but there's no relationship between I and the caller. We just happen to be individuals with the same last name. Welcome, Angela. Go ahead. What's your question?
Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much. I really don't have much of a question. I do have a lot of statements to make. As I said, my name is Angela Edwards. I would like to thank Senator Hahn for coming in and being able to clear Senator Hahn, being able to clear the air on things as far as the funding in Minneapolis, because it is a lot of tension and chaos that really shouldn't even be. Senator, I was interested to let you know that a lot of what's going on in our community is based upon starting off with the funding and the fact that so many organizations is claiming to provide so many services. But at the same time, when the clients are going to seek help, there's no help. They turn you around. They say, oh, we don't have bus cards. We don't have this and we don't have that. Back to piggyback on your conversation, we're not going to say hopefully that we create change for next time. We need to say there's an emergency in the streets of Minneapolis. Our kids are dying because there are no services that's being brought forward truthfully through these proposals. Now, that it gives us all the blame. We're all responsible for the killing. We're all responsible for the poverty, the lack of concern. We're all responsible, and I feel like if we don't pull it together as far as who's getting the funding, where are the services, who's in charge of making sure that organizations is doing what they claim, then we're lost. This is getting off the chain as far as our kids. I'll give you an example. On yesterday, I took my nephew to Emerge to look for some of them.
How old is your nephew? What's the age of your nephew?
He's 14 years old. He wanted a job, so I took him to Emerge. Emerge told me, well, ma'am, there's no job where we filled the positions, and that's just that. Well, go over to the YMCA. So I left. I went over to the YMCA. They told me the same thing. So I went from there to Camo J. They almost told me the same thing. So I just got so stressed out, and they came up with, oh, go to the Park Center. The Park Center did create him a job because they seen the distress and the frustration that he's 14. Do you want him to be a victim? Do you want him with a gun? Are you serious? If we can count bullets every day and see our kids being killed and see our kids out here going to jail for incarceration, kids killing kids, all of this got to stop because it's everybody who's involved in deceiving these dollars, claiming to give these services, we are all killing ourselves. We are killing our kids, we're killing our community, and we're killing each other's organization. My organization is Education Explosion, and Education Explosion has put more than 168 people in GED/college. Mind you, every time I reach out to one of the organizations who do get the money, they tell me, ma'am, we don't have anything we can give you for outreach. Ma'am, we refer our people to go to the Department of Ed. Ma'am, just keep giving us the referral. You know what, Senator Hahn? I cannot sit and allow all this corruption that's starting over at your legislature and ending up in the community, that's ending up in our morgue. My kids dying, these are all of our kids. This is our community. We need to take it back. And the reason why it's gone away, is because of the so-called leadership. We need the think tank in place so that accountability is there. Therefore, services are being rendered. An outcome will happen. We need to be able to monitor what is happening in our community.
Angela, we appreciate that we have other people waiting. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your observations and your activities. Mr. Allen?
Yes, and I appreciate that, Angela. I know Angela went through a lot yesterday, and she called in and told me about it. And we have a friend of the show, Mr. Jamar Nelson. Mr. Nelson, go ahead, please. Hello, Mr. Nelson, you're live on the air. Okay, he must have hung up. That's okay.
Let's move to the questions for our guest because he is extremely important in this process. Senator, can you give us an indication of what the reporting process will be? Because I know in some cases, as it pertains to the allocation, there are different departments of state that have a certain role with the distribution of the monies. What is the expectation of the legislature, and particularly the House, on how they're going to be able to assess as this is anything being done the right way?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to know is where the monies have been dispersed, who has received those monies, and to make sure that there's clear plans and that those plans are understood. And I think then there needs to be a review of what has happened to those monies. And there are different mechanisms that can be used. There are the money.
Are you waiting to talk to the host or ask the senator a question?
Did we lose the senator there? Is he still with us?
He is still with us.
Let me see. We have to move on on the call. Senator, continue if you wish.
Sure, that there are some other things that we need to do. I agree with you. We do have a legislative auditor that is a nonpartisan function, very highly respected. That person has a number of staff, and they're charged with making sure that monies that the legislature allocates are used in the appropriate way. And that has been one of my thoughts after our meeting, is that we may need to get the legislative auditor to do a audit of the monies and to make a report. And those have been very useful in the past to help point out things that maybe are not happening the way they need to, and it has given the legislature clear direction on what needs to be changed.
Senator, let me ask this question again, Ron Edwards.
Yes.
If you could walk us through, because there was a lot of touting and publicity in our newspapers and et cetera, what was the real story behind the request by the NAACP, in which at one point in time their leadership indicated that they were in line and online to receive upwards of $33 million? I mean, what happened with that, to the best of your knowledge, sir?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, there was, I think it was about $35 million that was set aside or appropriated for various programs. I'm not sure at this point if I know exactly how much is being allocated to each of different organizations. I know many times when ideas are first introduced, people make a presentation or they bring a bill and ask for certain amounts of money. It's unusual that those grants or those funds are appropriated in exactly the amounts that are first asked for. And in many cases, it depends on the capacity of organizations to use it and on whatever funds are available. So the course of the conversations, I think the original request probably got pared down a little bit, but I don't know off the top of my head exactly how much was being allocated to each of the organizations. I know there was more than one, and I think that to me is the question for the legislature next year, is to look at where those monies were dispersed and what exactly those funds were used for, and make sure that, as I said before, that those things are being targeted and used in the ways that they were intended, and they're not being used just to, make political friends or to do things that may not really meet the needs of the community. And I really appreciated Angela's comments. I can tell just from her comments that she is very passionate about what is happening in your community, we want to find out what is the best way to provide effective help or resources to make sure that those things don't continue. And I can assure you that we're highly committed to doing that. And I don't pretend to know all the answers. And it's one of the things I hope as we go forward that you and others will continue to work with us and help us to understand what is the effective way to use these funds, and that they are used in the appropriate fashion.
All right. Mr. Allman, the Senator's been with us, I think, certainly an appropriate time. We don't want to wear out our welcome and et cetera.
Yes,
why don't you
exactly.
begin to wrap it? Any specific questions you have, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, I just have one more question. In a proposal, Senator Hammond, that I saw for the NAACP, which Mr. Edwards was just talking about, were they allocated the $1 million that they asked for to monitor under 16C?
I don't know the answer to that. I'll be honest with you. I'll have to look and see, and I can find that out and let you know when I get that answer.
Sir, could you do that? We would certainly appreciate it. It's important.
I will in the next couple of days. I'll get a clear.
Okay.
I'll get a clear explanation of what funds were allocated to which organizations, how much, and for what purpose. I'll try to get you a summary of that, and I have your contact information. I'll get that to you, and thank you for inviting
Senator,
me to
thank you.
Mr.
Allen, we can –
Yes, thank you very much, Senator Hamm, for joining us. We hope you come back, and we truly support what you're doing there at the state legislature. And I appreciate all the calls that called in, and sorry we didn't get to you, but we have a lot more. Again, Senator Hamm, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I'll be glad to join you anytime.
Thank you, Senator.
You bet.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Mr. Allen, we've gotten some, if there are some calls holding, we want to get to them. We've gotten a little bit better clarification on what we were hearing. It doesn't seem that there's the kind of clarity, if you will, that we would kind of think that we should have based on what we've been told by other sources. But we know it'll all work itself out. We just hope, though, that there is a sincere and effective movement, because I am very much aware that there are groups, young men and women, who have submitted proposals and et cetera and are asking questions of some of these organizations. And the one that continues to be in the forefront is the organization known as Emerge. There is some real concern with respect to the sensitivity of that organization to understand what's really going on out here.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Mr. Edwards. You know, we had the caller earlier, Miss Angela Edwards, no relation to you, of course, who went through a kind of a rough time. I got a telephone call from her yesterday, but we have some more callers here. I'd like to get them in and let them know that we're going down
to
this here. Let's start here. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. 0303, you're live on the air.
0300. Yeah. move on.
Hello,
on,
sir.
Move on.
Yeah. Okay, let's try this one. Caller, you're live on the air. 5336, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
All right. So, yeah, I totally agree with Miss Angela, you know, about she just hit it dead on everything she said, you know. It's like I'm lost for words. So here it is, you know, 2016, and we have the same programs in place that's been getting this monies and misappropriating, you know, and lying to the community. And we should have a state-of-the-art community center with five different sports and a sports team or something, some kind of outlet. Where are the outlets? We have a Fowell Community Center and a couple more that's been in place for years and years doing the same thing, okay? It's time for an upgrade. And like she said, there should be a think tank in place at all times. Audit all times. Biweekly, monthly, you know.
Yep. Something's
gotta,
daily if we have
you
to.
Know, change.
All right. So
okay,
appreciate
your
observation,
call.
Sir.
Appreciate it.
And we know Ms. Angela Edwards is listening in. Thank you for the call. All right.
Yeah,
Mr. Allen, I want to get the calls in. People have been waiting. I know they have some questions.
Caller?
Yep.
You're live on the air. 5492, go ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good.
Okay. What's your name? Where are you calling from, sir?
I was just listening to Angela Edwards. It's like, you know, she hit it right on the dot. It's ridiculous,
okay.
On especially the north side. It don't make sense, you know, and people are coming in trying to, young people trying to coming in looking for help, and they're being turned away. And they go get a gun. And next thing you know, it's over. You know, and we need to listen and learn, you know. We need to get it together. And
no, I agree.
All right.
That's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your comments, sir. Appreciate
all right.
it. Listen again. And we have
interesting
here,
observation by both the last two callers, that something
yes.
that, you know, I know that we try to stay away from. And that's the fact that these young people are reaching out. It's the reason that I was asked by the Federal Oversight Department of Justice group to make sure to point out that some of these same young men and their organizations, the Urban Consortium and the group known as COI, are stepping up. They have submitted applications and support. And yet one of the things that troubles me is when these meetings take place downtown, and of course, the African American community is not allowed to be present and accepted. These young men are maligned, disrespected, and dismissed. And at some point, that has to cease and desist, Mr. Allen.
I agree.
Just was text the message. I know you're being text also, talking about the so-called empowerment zone, Nas. People are saying now 31 million. By the way, there was a story yesterday's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune. Mr. Allen, can you just kind of enlighten us a little bit about the Wilder Foundation's findings? And so for our international
sure, sure.
and national audience.
Sure, let's do that. The Wilder Foundation did a comprehensive report on the Northside Achievement Zone. And I just have to read this, Mr. Edwards. I just happen to have it right here in front of me in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
It says, now
that's what I was seeing from Studio B. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Now I don't want our listeners. We have some more callers. Just hold on, because you might want to comment on this too. They used a formula that was kind of strange, and I need to tell you this formula. I got to contact the system scientist, my good friend Mr. Matt Johnson. Hopefully, he'll crush these numbers for me and come back, you know, with what I'm looking for, because just me not being a mathematician, these numbers are still way off. The formula was likelihood of depression, the impact of ECE, whatever that is, on depression, the rate, the health care cost of depression, under the discount rate, the age of impact, and the age of participation. So the report from the Wilder Foundation, according to Nas, said the social return on investment in Nas is $6.12 for every dollar invested. The net benefit to society is $167,000 per participant. Okay, the return on the return on taxpayer investment is $2.74 for every dollar invested. Society gain. We got someone getting in here. Let me just get them out of here. There we go. And
mm-hmm.
and so with that said, Mr. Edwards, they're obviously saying that, you know, they're putting $167,000 back on the street, that these people are the people that they're serving are becoming a dollar amount or a benefit to society by participating with NAS, which I'm having a real challenge trying to understand, because
by the way, Mr. Allen, because we have national and international
mm-hmm.
listeners, NAS means what?
The Northside Achievement Zone. It's a zone in North Minneapolis, approximately 200 blocks wide, and just a solid small area. Of course, they left out North High and Henry, but it's a program that was funded by the Promise Neighborhoods, signed off on by Congressman Ellison, Senator Klobuchar, Senator Franken, and the mayor, R.T. Rybak, at the time, and some of the people on the city council. Of course, the current mayor was on the city council at the time. And so it's a program that basically gives a pre-K kid a shirt that says college graduate 2035. And the problem with that, Mr. Edwards, is that are all of our children going to college? What about the ones that have a engineering knack and might want to be automotive mechanics or entrepreneurs or things like that? So there's a big gap missing, and a lot of these parents are unemployed, and I know there wasn't a real focus. But they have the nerve in this report to say the improved health care outcomes, and they put a dollar amount on it, $28,000, and increased tax revenues, another $15,000, and other public savings due to lower crime rates, reduced need for special education, and fewer public assistance in child welfare cases.
You're talking about, let me just cut in, Don. Lower crime rates in Minneapolis? In North Minneapolis?
Yes. In the treatment zone where the majority of the murders have been happening, by the way. I was just happy to know, based on the spot map and what's going on I'm looking at. And it's fewer public assistant child welfare cases, which will save $8,000. The total society gains from NAS total more than $16.7 million net. Now, the problem is, Mr. Edwards, we're not seeing that. This math is foul. I don't see anybody seeing that anywhere. And so with that said, there are huge issues.
But now let me understand, because of the politics and what's going on, and we want to get to our callers. My understanding is from political sources at the state capitol that the consuls, as they are referred to, have been directed on tomorrow evening somewhere in, what, West St. Paul or somewhere, are supposed to be having an informational update, which appeared not to have taken place until after it was announced that the Republican leader of the Senate, minority leader, was going to be on this program tonight, kind of talking in terms of what was going on. So at what point do we have a meeting like that in South or North Minneapolis?
Yeah, you know, and I don't know. And this meeting is tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Wellstone Center's Neighborhood House back there on 179 Robbie Street in East St. Paul. And so I don't know. I mean, the question remains, you know, we're going to have a meeting like this in North Minneapolis, not just one in St. Paul. And it's, you know, Senator Hahn just laid it out for us that, no, the Republicans were not blocking anything, but, yes, they're concerned about where the money is going. And you know, Mr. Edwards, there's been a long history of using, especially the black people in 55411 and 55405, as cattle for disparity funding, because you can find everything in North Minneapolis. Okay, oh, we got breast cancer, we got colon cancer, we have unemployment, we have dropouts, we have this, and only a handful of agencies that don't even really deal with that get the money. And that's why you go to the Urban League and ask for a bus pass. I remember, Mr. Edwards, when you were the chairman of the board, the longest seated of the chairman of the board for the Minneapolis Urban League, you could actually go in and get a bus pass after you filled out information about the job you had, why you needed the bus pass, and you were gladly given a bus pass till you got on your feet and you could buy your own. Okay?
Of course, we had the personnel and the personnel power, because we had over 114 employees and five different sites back in those days. And so we were extremely able and competent to be able to respond there. And of course, when organizations get down to the place where, you know, the only person that's really there are the executive directors and maybe a administrative aide at six figures and a big five figures, I guess it's difficult when a person comes in talking in terms of what resources are available. But I must tell you, Mr. Allen, I must stay on this point, that given the level of violence that is gripping the city, and particularly in North Minneapolis, I mean, we're getting to the place now where, you know, every night there is massive shootings and et cetera, North Commons this past Monday evening. Of course, the four African-American women, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we get any call on that, because the media did not identify the fact that the four victims were four African-American women, all young, all below 32, 33, if you will. And I found it puzzling that there has been no examination. Now, I do have to say, and I thought that it was very timely, the article in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune of the young child who there at the 1600 block on Plymouth Avenue North was shot while she was in her bed watching television both through her foot. But we definitely have the tragedy of Miss Beeks gunned down. Her funeral was today, if you will. The sister of the Reverend Brian Heron being shot and wounded as she was merely waiting for a hair appointment and et cetera. But it's even beyond that, because we're not even telling you of just how many shootings are actually going on. I saw a number once again today at 131. That number is about 30 off, okay? It's more like closer to 160 being shot, wounded, and et cetera across the city. But over now 108, 109, 110 individuals being shot in North Minneapolis alone. That's just unacceptable. But we are now being told that financing is here. I'm aware that a couple of organizations that are comprised of young men who are products of this community, who are desperate to save lives and et cetera, have actually been turned away. You know, in fact, one of the heads of one of the organizations, nonprofits, if you will, a Caucasian, made the statement that the Negroes had to understand that he was not a piggy bank. And yet he has just received a nice bundle of money. And there are some out there, and I know who you are, know your discussions that are going on, who are trying to make it appear that there is no money whatsoever. And as I said to the senator for youth violence prevention, and I think that's just outrageous, you know. But anyways, any additional calls, Mr. Allen? How late are we going? We didn't say that. Are we going up to 1 hour or hour and a half? Mr. Allen must be Mr. Allen must be on a call. Somebody must be calling him. Allen, are you back with us?
I am back, and we do have a caller.
All right, let's get the call.
8102, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
This is Mr. Nelson.
This is Jim. This is.
Yes,
how are you, Mr. Nelson?
How are you doing? Welcome. What can we do for you? What's your question?
Yeah, gentlemen, I don't even know where to begin. First of all, it was a nice coup to get on the senator because, you know what, we need to have Republican perspective on African-American issues, because let's not beat around the bush. Republicans have an obligation to the African-American community, but we as African-Americans and African-American leaders have to allow them the opportunity to participate in trying to eradicate some of the issues that we tell them that are bogging us down. I was so proud to hear today at the funeral of Miss Beeks, of a victim of the senseless crime that's been going on in North Minneapolis, to hear Reverend McAfee, who eulogized it, announce that he and his church and other churches across St. Paul were raising money, I think $100,000 or more, to hire some workers to work the beat, work the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul to help eradicate some of the senseless crime that are going on. So
okay.
That was, you know, fantastic to hear. I hope that does come to fruition. I looked at he had a little graph, and I think up until now they have raised up to, at his church, $50,000, a little under $1,000.
Okay. So, let me just say this, Mr. Nelson. I was in a meeting with Reverend McAfee a little over a week ago, and I heard him actually lay out the narrative where he was talking in terms of, this is a meeting with Chief Janae Harto, where he was talking in terms of being able to put our 25 young man north Minneapolis, 25, south Minneapolis, and apparently he's been in some kind of negotiation with the God Squad and others in St. Paul, and about 20 ambassadors, quote-unquote, facilitators and et cetera in St. Paul. So what he announced at Miss Beeks' funeral this afternoon is consistent with what they've said. Now, that's an interesting number. We understood a couple weeks ago the federal task force that they initially said that they had raised 100,000 and that there is a negotiation going on for another 100,000. And hopefully we'll hear more about this, sir, and we will get a better feel if the Council of Churches, MAPS Council of Churches, very powerful, powerful organization, is going to kick in and match the 100,000 that Reverend McAfee, and I assume it's the State Baptist Convention. Is that who was being identified, Mr. Nelson, or
absolutely.
Were you
yes,
able
thank
to?
Thank you for helping me. I couldn't remember, but yes, sir. Thank you for helping me remember that. You're correct.
Yes, yes. And that's the Reverend Billy Russell.
Yes, he was in attendance,
the,
I believe.
President of the State Baptist Convention. So 200,000 for at least because the Council of Churches have allegedly said that they will match what is raised by the African American churches, and so we could be looking at least Mr. Allen, at least 200,000 would be in the coffers to bring these young men onto the streets. Now, here's what we have to be careful of. Just yesterday, James Everett, who has been involved and has been employed by the Chamber of Commerce and Downtown Council for a couple of years, was on Channel 5 yesterday. One of the new reporters walked with him through downtown and et cetera yesterday afternoon. And he was talking about the many things that they had done. Unfortunately, last night we had another major confrontation in downtown Minneapolis. There are videos of the gentleman showing probably upwards of 65, 70, 80 young men, women fighting in the street, and a young woman was stabbed in the neck. We hope that it is not life-threatening. I made inquiry today in a meeting, and there was no indication that there had been a DOA, but there was tremendous violence. And then for those people that live up in what we call Tangletown, you know, up around 26th, 25th, 28th, and from Penn to, the zone, Mr. Allen, the zone that Nas works in, a lot of shots fired, houses shot up, and et cetera, last night. So these individuals really need to get out there. We really need to have these ground troops, if you will. Mr. Allen can appreciate this as a former military soldier, if you will. We need to have that personnel out there. We need to have them in the tradition that we've done in this community since, even before United for Peace. You gentlemen remember United for Peace, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so we really need to see that happening. Mr. Nelson, I certainly appreciate you bringing us that immediate information, because people were wondering how the negotiations were going between the Black Ecumenical Community and the Minneapolis Council of Churches. And I have to tell you, gentlemen, I don't know how much aware you are of the Minneapolis Council of Churches. They are a powerful entity with a lot of assets, if you will. But, Mr. Nelson, I kind of cut in on you. Other observations, sir, that you had, because you attended a very sad memorial funeral slash today, and we are certainly concerned that there has been no one apprehended that is in custody. Now, three individuals were arrested on the day that Ms. Beeks was shot and killed, but they were released because, here we are again, witnesses did not validate what they said was their original testimony. Was there any feeling around the funeral today at Reverend McAfee's church that the family is being told that they're close to the apprehension of somebody, or somebody's going to identify who it was? Because we also have no suspects in the shooting of the four African-American women at 8th and Humboldt this past Sunday evening, gentlemen. And so that's getting to be kind of scary. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, absolutely, Mr. Edwards. And the family was feeling a feeling of rejection and disappointment, because there has been no one coming forth as of yet when you think about a lady that was battling cancer, and the cancer didn't kill her, it was a stray bullet from some assailant, some fool coward that was shooting at someone else. You know, I'm not even going to come on tonight's show, guys, and bash Nikema Levy-Pounds, because I think that we all have an obligation to our community to do something. What I am doing is going to employ her to work with other members of the community that have other ideals of trying to eradicate this crime. As you just said, Mr. Edwards, so profoundly, man, all hands need to be on deck. We need a somewhat, as you said, a troops on the ground to help.
Sir.
It may not eliminate crime, but you know what? Most cowards are afraid to shoot and kill if they see a presence of someone that isn't going to tolerate it. We have to start working with the Minneapolis police. We can't let – that's where I fought. Now, I am going to bash her. That's where Nikema Levy-Pounds needs to start working with Jhené Hartou and the mayor on building a bigger police presence in our community so that these cowards aren't as readily to shoot. We have to start being more proactive instead of being reactive, and that's the conjury that we're stuck at. We're always trying to be reactive instead of being proactive. So, again, I go back to what I said earlier, gentlemen, my first preface quick, that Republicans have an obligation to our community. We have to allow them to their obligation. We have to, no matter the color of any individual that has an ideal that may help us, we just have to extend the olive branch and be willing to work with them in order to cure some of the woes that are ailing us right now. This community is suffering, and no one has any easy answers, but we cannot do it as individuals together in this village. We can try to eradicate some of the violence that has all of a sudden besieged our community.
Well spoken, Mr. Nelson. Well spoken. Any other specific questions?
I just want to appreciate you guys, gentlemen like you guys, to keep up the good work. You know, this is what we need. We need community leaders like you guys that shine a light on what's going on in our community, that's not afraid to invite Republicans on, that will have the courage to come on. Because, hey, we're a good community. We're not to be nice and appropriate. And community members like Angela, that is, man, so passionate, that cares about the community, that's what we need, too, people that care enough not to give up. Because if we don't get out the notion that seeing a crime committed makes you a snitch if you call the police officer and then follow through with what you see, it doesn't make you a snitch. It makes you someone that cares about your community. If you love your neighbor and you've seen her son or her nephew or someone, her loved one, their life tragically ended, and you tell nothing, you are just as much as a coward as that fool that ended that person's life. We need to go over that. There are no such thing as snitches if we want to eradicate the idiots that are committing these crimes. Now, I'll say it again. We need drops. So the monies that we are getting, hopefully it's allocated properly, because joblessness and crimes does go hand in hand. But we need to start focusing together.
Right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Any questions from your side, Mr. Allen?
No, I appreciate Mr. Nelson's words, wise words. Appreciate it, and thanks for calling in. Appreciate it, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And we have another caller. Caller 9272, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, yes, I'm Ron and Don. Good evening. I am calling in response. I didn't hear the comment made earlier by the person you guys mentioned that was so passionate. But you know, I'm passionate as well, and it seems like a lot of people are not really focusing specifically on the tragedies that are taking place in our community. When we have an elder, kids, and young women being shot in our community, they're targets. And that requires an immediate response. Now, we did once have an elder who passed away in a home invasion. For some reason, we're not finding the suspects. I'm not sure if if the police are effective enough when it comes to that, they have a lack of response. They're also reactive, not proactive. So, but one thing I wanted to mention that I was concerned about, because we do have black elected officials, and they stand up when it comes to demanding money for our community and using our historical ills to say that we deserve this money. But when we have our kids dying in the street, we don't hear from them. And we need them to really speak up. We need them to have press conferences right there where our elder, Ms. Beeks, passed away. We need them to come out just as well as they came out out there in the Camden area. You know, so we need them to not segregate, you know, when it comes to not be divided when it comes to that. And another thing that I wanted to say, you know, we're constantly running to the government and stuff like that for funds, and that's fine. But then how much money are we willing to put at the table when it comes to investing in our own community? We have leaders, we have people who are well endowed that can invest in their own community to build and uplift it. Another thing I wanted to say, I'm a member of the NAACP, and why are we all constantly looking for Nikema for the answers for what's going on in our community? I mean, she's not a native of Minnesota. We have people who have been here, been working hard, who we should be looking at more than we're looking at Nikema. But then another thing I wanted to say, we have, you know, I participated in the election, and I expect that our executive officers commit themselves to the mission of the NAACP. I wanted to say that we're not a marching agency. We're not an agency that we're all about rallies. But we need to be prepared to put forth bills. It would have been nice if we would have seen Jamar there, you know, Jamar Nelson and Don, you there. Because one thing I noticed is that when we were dealing with the Jamar Clark incident, we had a packed house. And the only reason we had a packed house is because so many of our leaders were divisive and objective of what was taking place when we were trying to hold the Minneapolis police accountable. And now that that's died down, then we don't have anyone coming and stepping up and saying that they care about the community. And, I mean, we can do it as much on computers and on Facebook, and a whole lot of people say you talk about it, but you're not being about it. But then the people that are talking about it and saying that they're not being about it, they're not even being about it. They only come around when it's time to keep us divided. So we need to commit ourselves to our own community. And it's sickening that we're not doing that, and we're constantly playing politics, the numbers game. Every time I hear someone talking about what's going on in our community, they talk about how much money is sitting there that somebody else got that we can go and get. But it's not about money when it comes to our community, because we spend a lot of money. We are financially empowered. We make moves when it comes to our spending power. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, it's time for new leadership. It's obvious that it's time for that, because what we're not getting anywhere. We need to embrace everyone's opinion and ideas, and that's something that we need to really, really All practice right. instead of talking about.
Let me just say this, because I was familiar with the scene and the investigation. I concur. I'm saddened by a lot of things. I try to be encouraged by a lot of things. I've been around a long time. But it's quite clear in many respects that knowledge, experience, and wisdom really doesn't count for anything, though I don't buy into that. But I really am amazed at four young African-American women, including one who lost a fetus, if you will, and probably based on where the wound and how the bullet went in, will probably never have children. Four women gunned down at 8th and Humboldt. And there's nothing but silence. Meetings going on. And leaders, you know, just what you said, talking in terms of how to get the money, but no one has even asked the authorities, do they have any suspects? You know, is any progress being made? And sometimes, contrary to what people think, the authorities would like to have that kind of pressure and those kinds of questions asked, if you will, but it's not happening. And so as a young African-American female, I would hope that you would be talking to some others. This community needs to put some pressure on, because this situation is out of control. And contrary to what people may think out in the hinterlands and et cetera, the African-American community is living in fear, and I know you and others are. So appreciate your observations, but please raise the question, is there any concern that four African-American women were gunned down by African-American men? Okay.
Well, the concern must come from us community members, because I went out there after where those women were killed, and it was sad to
not
see.
Killed,
I had
not
to call
killed,
the
mean,
city. What was
shot?
I'm sorry.
Wounded. Don't
I'm,
say
I'm, thank
shot
God.
Wounded. Yeah.
Thank God. But one of the females who were killed, you know, we have to think about their children, you know, because
uh-huh.
one of the females, the father, had just recently passed away on Penn Avenue. So we have to think about how traumatic this is when it comes to a child that once had already had to deal with losing a father. Now his mother has been shot in this crime violence. But then on where this happened, I went there and I had to call the city because it was sad to see that the glass is still out, the pole is still out. And then we have children that, you know, young kids, there's schools in that area. So if the city don't care about the community, if the community members don't care about the community, what do we expect?
Yeah. All right, then. Appreciate your call. Appreciate your observation. And I hope that you put some pressure on all of us about the Miss Beeks, the Miss Heron, if you will, and certainly four young African-American women gunned down. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, and Mr. Evans, we have another call.
Let's get our caller in. And obviously we're going until 10, Mr. Allen.
Yes. We have a caller, 4312, caller. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I just want to interject about making sure that we all be held accountable. It don't just start with the community and the police.
Oh.
A lot of us know what's happening from the household. If we be involved with our children's life and the people who are living in our household, and we take the makeshift to know what's happening around us, please, as parents, as uncles, as niece, aunties, and everything else, we know what's happening. We on Facebook, too. Even when them kids running in the door saying, oh, I was just downtown and I seen this and that. You as the parent, you as the auntie, you as the elder adult need to come forward and tell that your niece know. Tell that your son know. Tell what happened, because you know. And my message earlier was all of us are responsible, and we are killing ourselves because we are not holding ourselves accountable. We need to get in the mirror. We need to quit playing these games. Take off them sheets. Turn that light on. Stop playing these games. I'm tired. Our kids are being killed.
Yes.
Right.
Well, being killed, shot, and maimed. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we have another caller.
Let me just say this on this last caller, because this is a conversation piece that has really escalated here. Because you're hearing people talking in terms of snitches make stitches and such things as that. She, this last caller and the caller prior to her, really laid a challenge out to us in community, because a lot of people know what's going on, you understand, and a lot of people are giving aid and comfort to this kind of acceptance, if you will, of violence, corruption, decadence, and et cetera. And as I said, Mr. Allen, to the last caller, I'm just surprised over the last couple of days that we have not seen a coming together of the leadership, et cetera, who say they represent the necessary reflection and thinking, because they are, you know, those who are omnipotent and et cetera. And do you, you know, I know for a fact until I, you know, in talking to you, that many folks had no idea that the four women that were shot and killed, shot and wounded, were African-American women, shot by African-American men.
Exactly.
Caller, go ahead.
Okay,
we've got more calls. It's interesting.
Yes, we do. Callers 8009, go ahead, please. Caller 8009, you're live on the air with the Ron and Don Show. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi,
this is Pam White from the Hurst Center. Hi, how are you? I just wanted to say,
hey,
you know, of course, I always have a lot to say, but I just wanted to say how much I appreciate you guys keeping us informed on what's going on. Last week was my first time actually listening to the show, and although I'm a leader in the community, I'm often focused on health care, and what I wanted to just say is that, you know, what we're really dealing with here, especially in our community, is untreated mental health, and how we glamorize marijuana usage. And marijuana usage can create things like paranoia, hallucinations. And I want to hear a little bit about how you guys see us as a community, not only coming together, but also looking at what's happening in our community holistically. So not only the social issues, but also the health disparities, like the mental health, like our chemical use. And what I also wanted to say is that we also have some of the highest HIV rates and chlamydia rates in our community. And how can what I do, and I want to be more active, I want to be more inclusive, and I know that a lot of that takes me, you know, making that step. But how I would love to connect and be a part so that we can look at things that are happening in our community holistically. And I think the other thing that's missing is that a lot of times we talk about social services, but we really aren't talking about dealing with those therapeutic needs of the community where people are not getting treated for things. And so you have family members of these children that may have some mental health issues or some chemical issues as well.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate your observations, and we'll try to do honor to it, if you will. Mr. Allen, go ahead. Some of your observations, because my associate, Mr. Allen, has been talking for a couple of years, contrary to, you know, how folks maintain that we don't need to hear his voice and et cetera, particularly about health care and particularly some of the infectious diseases. But also, here we are again, Don, the organizations that have received a lot of money. I mean, this goes all the way back to the whole thing of tobacco. And the kind of money that was made available to this community, the tobacco trust fund and et cetera, and how that money was misspent, how the money's dealing with some of the infectious diseases and et cetera has been misspent. The last caller raised some real tough questions about we need to have a better explanation of what we're doing, because we are probably one of the least medicated communities anywhere in the free world. But it's also the question, she raised a heck of a question about the whole thing of marijuana and hallucinated drugs and et cetera. But you're thinking, Mr. Allen, because you've written quite a bit on this.
Yeah, and Ms. White is still with us. I'm glad she hung on for a second here.
Oh,
because,
okay. Go ahead.
About a month ago, you know, the Minnesota Department of Health comes out with this thing about chlamydia. So, and we got chlamydia, AIDS, HIV, herpes, syphilis, everything. And again, since 2008, since I really started paying attention, and I probably known Ms. White that long in her different capacities, doing different things in the city, no one has addressed the girls 13 to 21 years old with one of the highest rates of chlamydia in the United States sitting right in North Minneapolis.
Yes, yeah.
And
correct.
The closest thing that they've come to is putting a bowl of condoms out at the front desk.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
correct.
Mr. Edwards knows this. Back a few years ago in 1980, 1981, when the AIDS thing started to boil up, there was billions of dollars pumped in to catch, you know, pumped into these organizations from everybody from the Urban League to North Point to, I mean, everything minority ethnic, because that's where the biggest, that's where everything was pointing.
Turning point.
So that, you know,
yes.
Yeah, turning point.
Let me say on that particular point, Mr. Allen, let me just interrupt here, because I always like to always reflect and put forward in advance individuals, living, breathing individuals who were very much on point when it wasn't popular. I well remember, because this individual just passed from this life a couple of months ago, Rex Marshall. Now, Rex Marshall, during the time that he was working at Turning Point, in that same period of time you're talking about, Mr. Allen, in the early 1980s, was a giant in this community with regards to these infectious diseases and et cetera. And I well remember at International Market Square when he brought one of the great advocates, with regards to HIV and et cetera, and what was really happening to Black America, Dick Gregory. And again, you know, I found it interesting on how the traditional white institutions of care, if you will, medicine and et cetera, seem to dismiss the observations of an African-American. Now, let me say this to both you and Ms. White, as from a person that's been in this town since 1945. You know, we used to have a cadre, I'll use that term, we used to have a cadre of black physicians, doctors in this city that were extremely proficient, if you will, expert and et cetera, but they were also very much into, quote-unquote, the survival of the African-American race. Dr. Agee, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Brown, I mean, just a whole host. And I researched this, and, I mean, going back to the late 1920s, early 1920s, the Dr. W.D. Brown the first. And I've noticed, ladies and gentlemen, that our, first of all, I don't think we have anything approaching the number of general practitioners. Doctors are now discouraged from being general practitioners. You know, everybody wants to get into the Allina and healthcare and et cetera. But, you know, there used to be a time when you're a doctor. I well remember Dr. Johnson and some of those black physicians. Not only were they men of consciousness, but they would keep you aware of what the heck was going on. And I know for a fact in the 1970s, 60s and 70s and into the 80s, a lot of the insurance carriers and et cetera were resentful that these black physicians were leading you in the right direction and causing medical institutions and et cetera to give us at least something approaching the same kind of health care. Now, I'm fairly familiar with that, the importance of health care, because one of my two grandfathers, and I was very blessed to have access to them. One lived to be 96, the other 92. But one, Dr. L. Virgil Miller of Kansas City, was a physician and who practiced medicine in Kansas City for 62 years. And I used to listen as a young African-American to he and his colleagues sit around and talk in terms of the importance of medicine, universal medicine, and et cetera. And, you know, Ms. White, Mr. Allen, I just don't sense that we have that kind of, and I use this word, we don't have that kind of advocacy as it pertains to our professional health corps. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can correct me.
Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am. That's the reason I laid it out.
And you may not be very familiar with HER Center, but it's a privately owned nurse practitioner clinic. It's my clinic. It's the first clinic of its kind. We opened our doors 6.5 years ago to cater specifically to the African-American women, girls, ages 12 and older. A few years ago, we started seeing probably about 60% African-American men. We are foot soldiers, which what that means is that we don't just stay in the clinic and see clients. We're knocking on doors. We have an initiative that we just started. We open our doors because of the HIV rates amongst African-American women. I mean, it is actually an African-American disease now, HIV.
Yes. Yes.
And so we never applied for grants. We're not connected with any big institution only because we want to be able to do what we have been called to do, and that's to treat the community and educate the community. That's not all we do, but right now that's going to be our focus, at least for the next year, is to screen 1,000 black folks. And whether you're heterosexual, we don't care about your sexuality. What we're saying to people is just – and we really try to stay connected to educating the community. So I go into a lot of agencies to try to get them on board to connect with us. And so we're not asking people for money. All we're asking people to do is open their doors to allow us to come in and test and offer information, because a lot of times in our community we don't want to talk about it.
But let me cut in and ask you a specific question, because the tenor of this program was to get clarification on some of the legislation that was passed in this last session. Did any of our legal representatives, and particularly political representatives, did they reach out and ask you to come forward and give any testimony before the different health committees and health subcommittees of both the House and the Senate?
I was asked by one of our community leaders to be a part of an initiative that was going on here in North Minneapolis. But when it came time for me to come forward, nobody contacted me, nobody pulled me in. And that's, to me, that's typical when folks know that there are those of us who may not be as vocal, who may not be as large out here, who it's like we're sheltered or we're isolated to do our own thing and work directly with the community. And so to answer your question, long story short, no, we were not asked.
Okay. Now, let me ask this question because I'm kind of like a lawyer. Just how bad is the epidemic? Mr. Allen, my associate, who obviously has talked with you and knows you, has been trying to sound the alarm with respect to some of the infectious sexual diseases and et cetera. Just what and how bad a shape are we as a community and its people? Like for you to share that.
With HIV, we are very, very bad. It is 67% nationally, but even in Minnesota, black women, that's African and African American, the African born and African American women account for 37% of the new HIV cases. And those are of people who are tested. But we only make up 5% of the overall population. African American women are 4% of the overall population in Minnesota, and African women are 1%. But again, we are 37% of the cases. African or men who black men who have sex for men who have sex with men, black men also have some of the highest numbers. I know that there was an article that people were talking about around the rate in Atlanta. We have to remember that Atlanta is what's their population? Is way more than 10. Overall, black men and black women account for probably 10% of the overall population, but we're accounting for 60-some percent of the HIV cases. So it's not about if we should get tested. It's not about our sexuality. It's about we all need to know our status. So I'm saying to everybody, it doesn't matter your social economic status, it doesn't matter your marital status. If you have never been tested, you need to be tested. You have to know your status. And so we're encouraging people, if they don't want to come to HERS Center to get tested, that they, you know, go to whoever their health care provider is and get an HIV test.
All right. Yeah, please do
and
this.
And gonorrhea and chlamydia.
Give us those figures again one more time for the purpose of impact.
The
HIV, chlamydia, and
so on.
Go ahead.
Yes. The report that came out for in 2015, for the 2015 HIV numbers, is that African-American women account for 20% of the HIV, the newly diagnosed HIV cases. African-born women account for 17% of the cases. But in total, black women only make up 4% of the overall population here in Minnesota.
Okay.
And
I'm going to appreciate you for that kind of depth. Go right ahead, and then I think Mr. Allen has a couple questions.
Okay.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've been posting this on Facebook, exactly what you're saying, and it just seems like we can't get, you know, the people that are out there that are saying they do this and this, they're not interested in these young African-American women not having a life. I wrote a report for Hennepin County to look at Somali women's the infant mortality rate, because if a Somali woman has been here 10 years, her infant mortality rate, or the infant mortality rate, is the same as a black woman that was born in Minnesota, which is telling in itself. So is there some kind of structural violence or racism going on that someone comes from another country and has basically the same disparities as a black woman, a black American or Minnesotan that's been here all her life? That's sickening to even see that. And it just looks to me that folks don't want to look that deep into what's really happening, and then when I, myself, or Mr. Edwards says something, you know, oh, we're trying to start trouble, or, you know, they don't want to hear that, and even though the facts, it's not us, we're just reading facts, you know, so we're going to have to find a way. Matter of fact, we're going to have to dedicate a show and have you come on and within the next 2 weeks here and and talk about this in detail, because I think it's important for our listeners in the local community to hear what's actually happening.
And that certainly will be done. I want to thank you, Ms. White. We're coming to the end of the program. We've got about 5 minutes left, but we'd like to invite you and have you back with us certainly in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Interesting statistics, Mr. Allen, frightening statistics. But, first of all, a man by the name of Rex Marshall, now deceased, just a great individual, a man who really, back in the 80s, tried to alert this community of this impending epidemic. And you yourself, raising this question numerous times on these programs and et cetera. And now we have an advocate who 6.5 years ago committed her life, along with others who were in the healthcare services, to try to do something about it. You know, I'm just so disappointed that you know, political leaders and others did not take advantage of her expertise. And actually, in the last two sessions of the legislature, asked her to give
and Mr.
others, her professional associates, to give testimony. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. We got a call.
You know what? We have like three more calls, and I want to at least give them like 15 to 20 seconds apiece just to say something.
Let's go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Caller, you have about 20 seconds, 53:39. Go ahead.
Hello. Is this me?
Yeah, hello. Go ahead.
All right.
What's the question?
I want to know why on Northside, Angela Edwards, I mean, she's over here. She's doing a whole lot of stuff for this community and as of me, too. So, you know what I'm saying?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for that call, sir. Thank you. Okay, and we have one more here that's been on hold. Let me see here. Okay, that's someone that wants to stay in the queue. That's fine. So, we successfully went through that list there, and if I missed you or you hung up, I apologize, but we will be on next Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. For an hour and a half, depending on what's going on, and we appreciate you listening. Mr. Edwards.
Again, I want to appeal, we have about 4 minutes left, that there really has to be some discussion. Our community is living in fear. I thought the story of the young 10-year-old little girl shot while resting on her bed, watching TV. In other words, she was in. There was no curfew, and et cetera. Her mother works a couple jobs, working way out in Eden Prairie, and et cetera, trying to raise her family, her children, et cetera. And I just hope that at some point someone is able to step to the plate and begin to reassure those of our community that there is a more than an interest, there is a caring, there is a passion, if you will, with regards to trying to deal with this problem. If we don't, Mr. Allen, you know, we're going to be having more of these programs, you know what I mean? Because there is a solution, there's an answer that is in the form of a solution. It's just a matter of, you know, how committed and how honest we are about approaching it. And there just can't be many more of these tragedies. The loss of the life of Ms. Beeks should have torn this community apart. I'm talking about emotionally, spiritually, if you will. And yet there's just kind of a silence from those that maintain that they know how to articulate. You know what I'm saying? And it's just not happening. So, again, I appreciate the callers. Appreciate the minority leader of the Minnesota Senate for taking the time.
Go ahead.
Let James Brown drive us on home. All right.
Yeah, he's going to do that.
Take two eyes to make a path.